Hi, I'm Mac.
Hi, I'm Abigail.
And this is Unsubs. This is the podcast where we recap, rate, and review all 324 episodes of Criminal Minds. And today we're talking season 3, episode 19, Tabula Rasa? Tabula Rusa? Abigail has just told me that it means blank slate in Latin, which I did not know.
According to the Criminal Minds wiki page.
Ooh, shout out Criminal Minds wiki page. Should we start off with some fun facts?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to, like, think of something that's so unrelated to the podcast just to be fun. Oh, okay, here's something. So my favorite meal in all of the world is macaroni and cheese. I love it. I love all sorts of it. I don't care. I'll eat Kraft. I'll eat Annie's. I'll eat frozen. I'll eat handmade. No qualms about it. And actually, how I got my name, Mac, is because I didn't feel comfortable sharing my real name because my real name is, like, pretty unique. So when on Tumblr a couple years ago, I let people vote, and for whatever reason, they chose Mac. And I can't remember why they did, but they did.
Mac and cheese.
I put out a post and I was like, I want to name people, like, top first five comments. I'll use those and then you can vote on them. And Mac and Cheese won.
I feel like I remember that.
Yeah. It was a couple years ago, but
it was a while ago. Yeah. Okay. What is my fun fact? My life hasn't been too crazy recently.
Oh, do you want to share a fun fact about our artwork?
Oh, yeah. Keep an eye out, guys, because we might be having some new artwork soon. Maybe we can get it on some merch, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. We're trying to increase our internet presence and make it very obvious that we're a Criminal Minds podcast.
Yeah.
And our artwork is a little mysterious.
Yeah, it's. I think it stands out, but it's not quite in the vein of what we want now.
Yeah, so we recommissioned both of the artists we've worked with before to give us some ideas, and because we're working on a Patreon, one of the artworks will be the Patreon and one will be the main feed, and then of course we'll still keep merch of the original one because we do love it. It's just good to switch things up, I think. So I'm going to do the disclaimer to say that we are in no way, shape, or form associated with the television show Criminal Minds.
And I'm going to talk about our rating criteria. So each episode can score up to 100 points, 20 points allotted into each of these five categories, which are criminal and serial killer, character development and character arcs, forensics and context, script writing, and background characters.
Oh, are we ready to go to Roanoke, Virginia?
I've been there, yeah.
Oh, you have? Oh my god.
Well, I've driven through it.
Oh, okay.
I think I may have stopped, so this was a while ago.
That is very exciting. I've never been to Roanoke.
Oh, another one of my fun facts is that an unpopular opinion I have is that I really like the American Horror Story season Roanoke. I know it's, like, not very, people don't like it, but I really liked it.
I think my favorite one is the circus when Jessica Lange sings that Lana Del Rey song, but they couldn't say fuck yeah, so she goes, ooh, ja.
I forgot about that. Oh my god.
Oh my god, when she sings Gods and Monsters.
Oh my god, you're right.
And she couldn't, because the lyrics are fuck yeah, give it to me.
Okay.
Yeah, and so Jessica Lange goes, ooh, chat. Oh,
yeah, I love Jessica Lange so much.
So we open in Roanoke, Virginia in 2004. We see Hotch and Morgan moving with a SWAT team through an apartment building.
We know that it's 2004 because Morgan's wearing a backwards baseball cap. Trying to show his youth.
We do get to see Bibby, Hotch, Morgan, and Reed later, but by Bibby, we mean like 4 years, and to show the passage of time, they're like, let's just change their hair up a little.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay, so they're going through an apartment building, they stop at a door, guns drawn, and Hotch calls out, Brian Matloff, we're with the FBI, we have a warrant for your arrest. So he doesn't answer the door, because I wouldn't either, to be honest. They break the door down and we immediately see a Cocopelli statue. So the apartment appears to be empty, but does seem to have a lot of dream catchers and tapestries and Cocopellis and that sort of thing. Morgan looks at the fire escape and sees Brian Matloff making, he's using his getaway sticks and he's making a run for it, and he goes up onto the roof. Morgan pursues him, and Matloff thinks he's Spider-Man, attempts to jump from, it's like, it's an apartment building, guys, tries to jump from one roof to the next roof. He almost makes it. He's hanging on for dear life. Morgan jumps, and he makes it because he is Spider-Man, and he attempts to save Matloff, but Matloff falls to his death. We don't know. We see flashes of Matloff's life, a picturesque nature landscape with a waterfall, graduation, birthday, his mother. We learn that Matloff didn't die, but he hit his head and he is in a coma. Cut to Quantico, Virginia, nowadays 2008, I think. We learn about Brian Matloff, aka the Blue Ridge Strangler. He allegedly, killed 3 victims in the Blue Ridge Parkway. Apparently, he's been in a coma for 4 years and just woke up. We say allegedly because he was never able to be taken to trial because he fled the police and then comaed himself. But the thing is, he doesn't remember a damn thing. So Hotch goes to meet with Cece Hillenbrand, who was the original prosecutor on the case, and meets her at the hospital where Matloff has been comaing, I guess? Let's make it a verb. Let's make it a noun. Let's make it an adjective. To coma. Hotch asks her what her plan is, and she says, quote, try him and fry him. And we're like, damn, Cece, you're cold-hearted.
She is.
We are again reminded that Hotch used to be a prosecutor, and he warns Hillenbrand to be careful. Quote, I got burned more than once when time changed the fabric of a case.
Waxing poeticals here, I guess.
Yeah, some similes in there. I don't know. Metaphors, I guess. And she's like, well, time hasn't changed the facts. He killed 3 people, maybe more. Maybe Rip Van Winkle is ready to come clean.
Oh my God.
However, the hopes and dreams of this case are quickly shattered by a doctor who informs Hillenbrand and Hotch that Matloff has focal retrograde amnesia. So Matloff does not remember anything about himself or the murders. So he's put in jail where he awaits trial. Rossi, Hotch, and Hillenbrand discuss the original case. Matloff had a type, young, white brunette, and jogging early in the morning. Hillenbrand gets a call that her key witness on the case passed away 2 days ago. So there's no witnesses, but they still are going to proceed to trial. This witness placed Matloff at the park with Darcy Corbett, victim number 3. The other 2 victims were Celeste Ferrami and April Sutherford. Hotch agrees to help Hillenbrand try to salvage the case while Rossi gets the rest of the team up to speed. We flash back to Roanoke, VA 4 years ago, so again, 2004. The police have just found the body of Darcy Corbett. We see baby Reed and baby Hotch and more. I wrote baby Reed and baby Hotch and Morgan. But I guess it's baby Morgan, too. And I guess we get a profile, or at least Hotch asks Reed for observations about the crime scene, and Reed gives them. And Reed is, it's clear from this episode that he's either recently joined or he's the newest profiler to join the BAU.
Yeah, they introduce him as the new guy when they go to the crime scene. Am I reading this profile now?
Yeah, this sham of a profile, yes.
He uses a belt. It's his signature. Hand line on the wrist means her watch is missing. He takes trophies. They're always buried face down, a sign of remorse. He can't bear looking them in the face. He's opportunistic. These victims happen to be in the wrong place at the right time. Wait, hold on. Shouldn't Gideon be here if it was 4 years ago?
Yeah, but Mandy left the goddamn show. So they couldn't get him back for one day. He was not interested.
At least Glee was able to reference characters when they did flashbacks and have legitimate reasons for Finn no longer being there when the character died, like, or when the actor died in real life. Come on, Criminal Minds, get with it. They could have been like, yeah, he's in Boston giving a seminar on terrorism.
I thought it would have been cool for them to have, like, a character who had since left the BAU be there, but we didn't get that.
Yeah.
So, because Matloff was a member of the Park Service, he would approach his victims with a ruse relating to his job. He would then bury them in the park so that he could revisit them when he was working. Darcy Corbett's father comes to the crime scene to identify the body. I don't really know why he's here. But Reed talks him out of it.
Reed was like, I have a good bedside manner. I'll be the one to talk to him.
And you were like, where did this go in the 4 years since this has happened? Just as the scene cuts and Darcy Corbett's father is being locked away by Reed, we pan up and we see that there's a waterfall. So this is the scene from Matloff's coma dream or whatever it is. So, cut back to present day times. Morgan tells the BAU that Matloff also had an interest in Native American mythology. Remember Coco Pelly? Remember? Coco Pelly is specifically Navajo. I learned that right before the show. Anyways, so Reed says, quote, there is a Native American belief that burying the body face down traps the soul and prevents it from haunting the killer. JJ asks if there could have been more victims, earlier victims, when Matloff was honing his skills. And Morgan agrees potentially the three bodies they do have, there was no sort of escalation and no hesitation. And they all seemed very like cut and dry. Meanwhile, Hill and Brand request that Matloff undergo the process of brain fingerprinting.
That's what my deep dive is on.
Okay. This will analyze Matloff's brain to see if the memories of the murders are still in there. Matloff's lawyer argues that this is basically junk science and that Matloff is not physically ready for this. Quote, I can't in good conscience let them go poking around in his brain. Hotch tells the court that the process is non-invasive. They'll just hook shit up to Matloff's body to monitor his physical response to graphic images. Matloff's lawyer gets all worked up, but Matloff is like, I want to do it. Quote, Your Honor, every day I wake into this, nightmare of not knowing who or what I am. And if this test can really help me remember, then whatever the consequences are, I want to do it. Outside the courtroom, Mr. Corbett shows up. He asks Reed if Matloff's amnesia is real and states he is concerned about the trial following through and Matloff being convicted. Matloff is ready to undergo brain fingerprinting. He asks Hotch, quote, You don't have any doubts about me, what I am? And Hotch is like, No, I don't. However, Matloff passes the brain fingerprinting test with flying colors? So I guess he genuinely doesn't remember, or they got the wrong guy. I don't know what the fuck this test is, but the screen the analyst is reading has six categories, which are determination, bootstrap index, probe selected, interaction, subject number, and block numbers.
Interesting.
We rate each episode on a scale of 0 to 100, and these are the 6 categories.
Oh, God.
Lots of cuts of Matloff looking blankly at this screen. Not for nothing, this actor is fucking good. Like, he genuinely is just, like, a blank slate, a tabula rasa, Cocopelli, what have you. Matloff starts having some flashbacks of what happened, meaning the murders that he committed while he's in jail. And then there's this friendly jail guard / security lady. I couldn't quite figure out what she was. But she clearly feels bad for Matloff, and so she's nice to him. He requests a piece of paper and a pencil so he can write down some memories, and she just says she's going to get him one. Just as she's leaving, he's like, "What's that smell?" And she's like, "Oh, one of the other guards made some popcorn." And he goes, "Do I like popcorn?" Anyway, the popcorn will make a reappearance later.
Popcorn's important.
Yeah, popcorn is like a background character in this episode. Matloff stands trial. Hodge explains that the BAU zeroed in on a Park Service employee using profiling to narrow down the 1,718 employees. We see a flashback where Morgan, Hotch, and Reed are narrowing down these potential park employee suspects. We have another short little profile.
More profile? He won't be a new employee at the Park Service. Cautious and organized, he leaves behind no trace of evidence. Bordering on paranoid, the kind of guy who needs to know exactly what the cops know, likely already inserted himself into the investigation.
So Morgan, in this flashback, is like, "We need to narrow down these employees. What's that new tech's name?" And we can see that the tech is Garcia. So he's like, "Reed, who is that?" And Reed is like, "Gomez?"
Despite the fact that he has an eidetic memory.
Oh my God. And Morgan is like, "Hey, Gomez." And when Garcia doesn't respond, he's like, "Hey, baby girl." And Garcia is like, "Excuse me?" That's where the "Hey, baby girl" thing came from. And Garcia runs all the workers in the system, and they narrow down onto Matloff because he's one of the only employees of the Park Service who, like, tried to interact with the case. Back in the now times, JJ finds out that Matloff had a visitor, the only visitor he ever had, and it was a woman who came about every 6 months. They learn that her name is Nina Moore. She's described by the hospital staff as cautious and nervous. On the initial visit, apparently she didn't even make it in the room. She would read to Matloff while he was in his coma, and she asked the hospital staff about his status and seemed, quote, concerned with his pain. Rossi, Prentice, and JJ discuss this. They think it's maternal. Prentice called Matloff's parents and was like, "What's the deal with this?" And I guess they were like, "Okay, Matloff's adopted."
So mommy issues.
This whole thing is just so weird because they're like, "He was adopted. His mother was not his mother," which is bullshit because adopted parents are your real parents. You know what I mean? It's so shitty, and I just feel like it's minimizing adoption, which is a very hard and expensive thing to do, and just being like, "They're not his real parents." Like, fuck off, okay? So anyways, Nina Moore could potentially be his birth mother, but it's not a common name, but it's common enough where there isn't one Nina Moore they can turn to. Based on the hospital's description of her, physical description, Rossi makes the leap that she's Native American, remember Cocopelli. So then Garcia hacks into the Virginia Department of Social Services website. And she's being super rude to the social worker who's like, "This was a closed adoption. You can't do this. You need a subpoena." And Garcia's like, "Fuck you. I'm going to send your boss your vacation photos." Like, what the fuck is happening?
I did not like that.
Back at the trial, Matloff's defense attorney is questioning Hotch. He's trying to pick apart profiling and behavioral analysis by bringing up the times when the BAU has been wrong. Apparently, the BAU thought the Baton Rouge killer was white and living in the city. Apparently, he was black and lived in the suburbs. With BTK, the BAU thought he was divorced and impotent. He was actually married with two kids. And the lawyer says, quote, "Having been wrong on those cases, isn't it possible that you were wrong about Brian Matloff? The fact is that behavioral analysis is intellectual guesswork. You probably couldn't tell me the color of my socks with any greater accuracy than a carnival psychic."
Oh, I love this part. This, I was like, Daddy Hotch, Daddy Hotch.
All right, hold on to your butts, everybody. Hotch goes, quote, "charcoal gray." And then the lawyer's like, "oh, you got one of them right." And Hotch continues, "you match them to the color of your suit to appear taller. You also wear lifts and you've had the soles of your shoes replaced. One might think you're frugal, but in fact, you're having financial difficulties. You wear a fake Rolex because you pawned the real one, probably to your bookie. Your vice is horses. Your BlackBerry has been buzzing on the table every 20 minutes, which happens to be the average time of the post from Colonial Downs. You're not having a very good day. That's because you always pick horses like you practice law by always taking the long shot."
Yes, Hotch.
I kind of got a little Roche vibes.
She's German. Rache. German for revenge. She could be trying to tell us something.
Thank you for your input.
Right. Yep. I was like, okay, BBC Sherlock.
Oh, God. So, cut to Nina Moore's house. JJ and Rossi confront her about being Matloff's biological mother. How dare she? How dare she be young and decide to give her child up for adoption? She's a terrible person. That's what the vibe is. Obviously, we don't feel that way, but it drives me crazy. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. So this poor woman, she tells them that she was really young when she got pregnant and she wasn't ready to have a child. So she gave him up for adoption. And then later in life, she was ready to have a child and a family. So she got married and did have a family. 5 years ago, 2003, before Matloff started his murder spree, he had his adoption records unsealed. I don't know if you can actually do that, if they're sealed, but supposedly he did that. And he contacted her. And she tells Rossi and JJ that Matloff wanted a relationship with her and she was very uncomfortable. She told him she wasn't interested in a relationship. She said she couldn't deal with him and the shame that she felt for giving him up and then also dealing with her family. And Rossi believes that Nina is Matloff's stressor. Rossi asks Nina why she visited him at the hospital, and she says it was because she felt bad and she wanted to be there for him. We also learned that after the phone call and the initial meeting, and she asked him to leave her alone, the only other contact they had was that he sent her gifts. And she says she wanted to throw them away, but they looked like they were family heirlooms, so she didn't. And we find out that this motherfucker sent her his trophies. Meanwhile, Matloff is having more flashbacks. The lady prison guard who escorts him to and from the trial feels bad for him. In the morning when she's taking him to the courtroom, she brings him popcorn. And he's eating it, and she's like, "do you remember?" Like, she's, to me, she was, like, asking if he remembered if he liked popcorn, and instead he goes, "I think I'm starting to," and his entire demeanor has changed, and you're like, this motherfucker is, like, the serial killer again. He has those memories. As he's being escorted into the courtroom, Mr. Corbett shows up with a gun and is sneaking up behind Matloff, but Reed stops him and talks him out of it, just like he talked him out of seeing his daughter's body. In the courtroom, the BAU has made Nina take the stand. She basically rehashes what she went over with them, including the gifts, and it's looking pretty bad for Matloff. After the trial, Matloff attacks the female security guard who was nice to him, but he doesn't kill her, but he knocks her out and steals her gun. He then steals a law clerk's car and takes off. He heads to the picturesque park with the waterfalls where he works slash buried his victims. He sees a young brunette jogging past, and he leaps out from behind a tree to attack and grab her. The BAU tracks him down. They find pictures he's drawn on the papers. So remember when he asked the nice lady prison guard for paper and pencil? So he used those to draw the waterfall. So Reed's like, oh, I have an eidetic memory, except I couldn't remember Garcia's name. I know specifically where that waterfall is. So they go to the park and they see that Matloff is holding a body, and we can only but assume that it was the jogger from earlier. The BAU approaches, guns drawn, and we realize that the girl Matloff is holding is actually a badly decomposed corpse. And Hotch is like, who is that? And he's like, quote, she was my first. The minute my feet hit the ground, I knew right where to find her. I killed them. Hotch asks him if he remembers, and Matloff says, quote, everything, every moment, every small detail, but it's still not real. It's like the memories belong to someone else. And Matloff has a gun and he's ready to take his life. And Hotch is like, don't do this. Like, there's still time for you to turn this around and go to jail and serve your time for these crimes. So Matloff is taken into custody, and we later learn that he pled out guilty. So he's getting life in prison without parole. Reed shows up at Mr. Corbett's house and gives Mr. Corbett the souvenir Matloff took from Darcy, which was a watch from Darcy's grandmother's. And he asks Mr. Corbett about the inscription on the back that says, quote, glory in the flower. And Mr. Corbett says it's Wordsworth, and he starts quoting this poem, and then he can't finish. And then Reed finishes the poem. So I'm going to read the poem from Wordsworth. What though the radiance that once was so bright be now forever taken from my sight? Though nothing can bring back the hour of splendor in the grass, of glory in the flower, we will grieve not, rather find strength in what remains behind.
What a weird episode.
That's one heck of an episode there, bud.
Something that I feel like, and maybe we'll say this more during the, like, when we rate it, but I feel like a lost opportunity they had here would have been, like, nature versus nurture. I feel like that could have been something that they played into. Of, like, it's like, is he innocent now because he doesn't, like, he has a choice to, like, he is in a position where he could now live a life where he's not murdering people.
Yeah, they could have leaned into it more. Like, I wish he hadn't attacked that security guard who was nice to him. I wish he had just, like, remembered that there was another body and told the police. I thought the actor was really good, and they had to, like, show that there was another body, so they had to get him back in the park, but it just sucks that he, like, was aggressive and stole someone's car and a gun, and
right.
I don't know, I was feeling for him a little bit in this episode, or I definitely was too. Yeah. I'm so excited to hear about brain fingerprinting.
All right, so brain fingerprinting only has a paragraph on Wikipedia, so I'm going to read it out loud.
Oh my fucking God.
So brain fingerprinting, this is from Wikipedia, is a lie detection technique which uses electron and, oh God.
Let me see if I can help you. Brain fingerprinting. Wait. Okay, hold on. Wait.
Electroencephalography.
There we go.
Wait, let me play it, really. Okay, so we're going to let the internet pronounce this.
Electroencephalography.
All right, okay, I'm going to read it out loud and have her jump in for me. So, brain fingerprinting is a lie detection technique which uses
electroencephalography
to determine whether specific information is stored in the subject's brain. The technique consists of measuring and recording a person's electrical brain waves and brain responses when asked questions about a crime, attempting to elicit a P300 response that indicates familiarity with the details of the crime. The technique is controversial, unproven, and of questionable accuracy. Comparison of brain fingerprinting with polygraphy showed mixed results, consistent with a, quote, mix of proven techniques and dangerously exaggerated benefits. There is an article from The Verge called Is Brain Fingerprinting a Breakthrough or a Sham? This was published in 2015. So here's a little bit of a blurb from it. In 1999, a woodcutter named James B. Grinder confessed to a 15-year-old murder, the death of a 25-year-old woman named Julie Hilton. A short time later, he recanted, contradicting himself over and over. His blood had been taken and compared against the crime scene samples, but with such an old crime, local police were worried the case might fall apart. So the sheriff called in a doctor he had seen on the news. The doctor's name was Lawrence Farewell, and he was promoting the next generation tool called brain fingerprinting. It was an advanced lie detector and claimed that it took a look into a suspect's brain to see if they were familiar with the details of the crime. This was the first time the technique had been used in an active criminal case, although Farewell had tested the technique with scientists at the FBI. So far, he said the accuracy rate was 100%. Jesus, that's such a bull. Christ. The local police were thrilled to try it out, so Farewell set up his computer at the prison where Grinder was being held, along with bundles of wires, electrodes used to take EEG readings of the brain activity. Grinder sat in front of a screen in his orange jumpsuit with the blue strap over his forehead to secure the device. Behind him, Farewell asked questions and monitored the results on a screen, grilling the convict about specific details of his crime. By the time the test was over, Farewell was convinced. Faced with overwhelming evidence, Grinder pled guilty and was sentenced to life without parole. There is no question that J.B. Grinder raped and murdered Julie Hilton, Farewell told the local paper after the plea. The significant details of the crime are stored in his brain.
And there is a picture of it. So this is the only time this has ever been used.
That's wild. I mean, this is from 2015, so I wonder.
Attach two pieces of conductive material to a person's scalp, forming a circuit, and you can begin to pick up on what's happening inside.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. Do you want to rate this episode?
Yes.
What do you think about the criminal/serial killer?
I felt bad for him.
You know, he wasn't the most original, but I think it's like an interesting philosophical debate.
Yeah, exactly. Do you want to just give it like a 10?
We could give him, I thought the actor did a really good job. We could give him a little bit more. Not 15, I don't know, 12?
Sure. Character development and character arcs. It was nice to see like a little bit of a flashback.
Yeah, especially the Gomez thing was cool. I liked that. Yeah.
But that outside of that, we didn't get tons.
Yeah, we didn't. 12?
12.
Okay.
All right. Forensics and context. Well, brain fingerprinting.
As the prosecutor said, sounds like junk science to me. But we have to give it to them because the whole profiling thing, where Hotch Sherlocked it for us.
She's German. Rache. German for revenge. She could be trying to tell us something.
Yes, thank you for your input.
I thought that was super cool, and we don't usually get to see stuff like that, but like that shit, I'm like, oh. Like when Hodge gets into that mode and like he did that shit to Strauss about her son, it was like, you love your son better. You love your son more than the other kids.
Yeah.
I don't think brain fingerprinting is used anymore. So it was only used in that one case, to the best of our knowledge. Yeah.
Should we give it like a 10?
Yeah.
All right. Script writing.
You know, I didn't like the fucking way this show treats adoption, but I thought the story was interesting. I thought it was like, it definitely was different. Because, like, we've had episodes where we, like, don't know the killer and they have to find it. We've had episodes where we know the killer and they have to prove he did it. But this is the first episode where it's like, should he be held accountable for doing it? Which I think is interesting.
Right.
12?
I would give it more. I'd give it a 15.
Okay.
And then background characters.
I don't know. What do you think?
10.
Okay.
All right, 59.
We just had our little excursion to Roanoke. You can follow us if you still want to at this point. At unsubs. Podcast everywhere. Buy our merch. All the links to everything is in the bio. If I'm ever convicted of a murder, don't use brain fingerprinting on me. You can probably be your new apartment.tumblr.com or my podcast, Your New Apartment.
You can follow me at Between Stage and Screen Podcast and all streaming services and on Instagram. And also, you guys should check out our merch.
Yeah. Check out our fucking merch. We got one episode left, though.
One episode,
and it's a cliffhanger.
Wild.